Welcome to the official podcast for St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Rochester, Michigan. You can learn more about our church at our website, stpfeeds.org. Our Sunday services are at 8 and 10 a.m., and all are welcome. This podcast is the sermon for Sunday, March 11th, 2018.
About 10 years ago or so, I took on a Lenten discipline of listening to an audiobook version of the Bible every day. It was broken up so that you could listen to the entire Bible in a year, be about three chapters a day, plus for dessert, a psalm or a proverb at the end mixed in. And I had so much fun during Lent doing this that I kept it up for the whole year and got through the whole Bible. The first time I had really systematically gone through, read, or listened to the whole Bible. Because we study the Bible in different ways. We focus on certain books, and our lectionary gives us little snippets, usually the greatest hits of the Bible we get on Sunday, sometimes over and over, and we miss, I have to say, some of the weirder parts of the Bible on Sundays. And listening to the whole Bible, I realized that there's a lot of the Bible that's pretty weird. For instance, the prophet Isaiah was once commanded to go around naked for 3 years. Think about this. In a culture that had body shame issues, there he was for 3 years naked. Probably a scandal to everyone and to him. Or the prophet Jeremiah, who somewhat inexplicably was asked to bury his underwear under a rock. This is not a passage we read on Sundays very often. And there is, if you look at it, deeper meaning. Some of the great theologians said when you get to one of these weird passages, you have to look deeper to find the meaning. It's not right there on the surface. You have to work a little bit. And so we come to our Old Testament lesson today. Another one of what I would consider the top 10 weird passages in the Bible. The people of Israel are out in the wilderness for 40 years. They are, as usual, whining about the food. Oh, how we hate this manna. Remember when we were slaves in Egypt, we at least had good food. There were herbs and spices and meat, but now it's just manna, manna, manna every day, and we hate it. Well, Moses was pretty fed up, and by this point, I think God was pretty fed up. And if you read the text, it says that God commanded fiery, poisonous serpents to go among the people and bite them, which I thought was great parenting advice when your children are whining about something. You just bring home a poisonous serpent, and the whining stops. Because the people are converted. They are now pleading with Moses, please pray to God and remove from us these serpents. And then another weird thing. Remember, this is the same basic story where Moses went up on the mountain and got the Ten Commandments, the most important of which was worship God and have no graven images. And then he makes a graven image of a snake on a stick, and he holds it up. And that's what saves the people. This is weird, okay? It's just weird. So how do we come to terms with this? Well, fortunately, Jesus gives us a path to the deeper meaning of this story because Jesus quotes it. It's probably the only reason we have this story on Sunday morning is because Jesus refers to it in the gospel. And he talks about his own ministry, his life, and his death as being an echo or a fulfillment of the story of Moses and the snake on a stick. He says, just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so I will be lifted up. You know, if you think about it, an even weirder symbol than the serpent on the staff is the cross, the instrument of shameful death that is transformed by Jesus' suffering and death into the symbol of our salvation. And Christ on the cross is the symbol of salvation and grace not only for the people of Israel, but now for all people everywhere and in all times. The message of the cross is grace, the free gift of God, that though we were whining and grumbling and far from the people we ought to be, we were dead to our trespasses, God still had grace for us. I want to say that I am grateful for the weird stories in the Bible. I'm grateful for the weird characters in the Bible, none of whom, with the exception of Jesus, are ideal. All of them have their problems. Moses himself, having heard the whining of the people, whines to God. Why did you give me this people? They're stiff-necked. They don't do what they're supposed to. I can't handle it anymore. The disciples are famously clueless about the message that Jesus is trying to teach. And I love that because, you know, when we look at our lives are far from ideal, at least for most of us. When we look into the inner reaches of our heart, there is some weirdness there as well. We do not measure up to the images that we hold for ourselves or that others hold for us. We are always wondering if we are good enough, always wondering if we are perfect enough. If you are cursed, we've been doing this Myers-Briggs typology in our Lenten class. You know, if you're cursed with certain personality types, particularly a streak of perfectionism, it's a curse, isn't it? There's something wonderful about striving for excellence, but there's something oppressive about always trying to be perfect and falling short. Some of us go through this roller coaster of self-worth as we go up and down in feeling elated and then dejected over and over, striving to find where is there grace? Where is God working in my life when I don't feel like I measure up to any standard at all? If you think about it, also, the people we associate with are kind of weird. The people in our families. Sometimes the people in our churches. Have you ever tried to describe church to someone who's never been to church? You say to them, hey, why don't you come with me to church? We're going to go and we're going to sing some songs that were written at least 200 years ago, some of which we don't like or know very well. Then we're going to say prayers that were written, some of them about 500 years ago, and hear someone read to us aloud from a book that was written 2,000 years ago. And then we're going to have a meal of flesh and blood. Oh, and there's free coffee afterwards. It's weird. But you know what? In and through the weirdness, in these ancient rituals and scriptures and prayers and hymns, we experience the grace and power and reality of God's presence. In the weird relationships we have with our fellow parishioners and with our family members, we experience, on a good day, the grace and power and presence of God. In our hearts, in the weirdness and messiness and vulnerability and brokenness of our souls and minds and hearts, we experience the grace and power and mercy and love of God. If that is, we choose to look up. Instead of looking down into the darkness, if we look up to the symbol of our salvation, not a snake on a stick, although, have you ever been waiting for an ambulance? You know, they still use a symbol much like that. It's also from Greek mythology. It is a sign, even in modern times, of healing and hope. But our symbol is even greater. The symbol of Jesus, who on the cross said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Who invited in his outstretched arms every person to experience God's forgiveness and grace and love. And all we have to do is not be perfect, is not to give up our weirdness, but it is to claim the inheritance of God's grace and love, to accept the free gift that God waits to give us each and every day, and to be willing to own and accept that gift and to share it with one another, to live in grace and charity and love with one another, and to try the best we can to keep on moving through the wildernesses of our own life, combating the fiery serpents that afflict us in one form or another, the pains, the illnesses, the worries, the conflicts, and the struggles to keep moving towards Christ's promise of resurrection life. May we experience in the weirdness of our lives the message of hope and grace and love that God bestows upon us in this community and in our hearts.